The Biden administration's new immigration restrictions increase the number of migrants who are denied entry to the United States. And yet, migrants continue to arrive at the border. What has played out since the Trump administration implemented various policies, including Title 42 and what is called Migrant Protection Protocols, or MPP, has led to most migrants getting stuck in Mexico. So who are the migrants and why are so many coming now? To help us better understand what's driving migrants to the U.S.-Mexico border is an immigration expert, Krish Omara Vignaraja, President and CEO of Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Service. Krish, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thanks again for having me.
Let's begin with the fact that our southern border is currently seeing a record number of migrants, and they're from many different countries, Venezuela, Cuba, Haiti, Central American countries. There've also been Russians, Ukrainians, Indians, many from African nations. So I want to ask you, are there actually more people arriving now, or is it due to a backup in Mexico caused by Title 42 and MPP?
Certainly what we are seeing now is a product of, or the relic of, the Remain in Mexico policy. When you think about the, you know, over a million or 2 million number being cited at the border, that is certainly in part because Title 42 allows for people to be quickly and summarily expelled, but it is allowing them to return. So you have folks who are kind of repeating their attempts to come into the U.S. But there are certainly dynamics, you know, globally and certainly in the Western Hemisphere that are leading to increased migration flows.
Yeah, and I want to talk about some of those. They call them push factors that drive people out of their countries, and there are also pull factors which lure them to the U.S. What are some of the forces driving people out of their countries?
Yeah, so to contextualize, I think it's important to understand that we are seeing a historic, unprecedented level of global displacement. So just last year, we surpassed the grim marker of 100 million displaced around the world. In our region, the push factors forcing people to flee their home countries is complex because it is a confluence of reasons. Countries like Venezuela and Haiti have obviously undergone political upheaval in ways that have destabilized their societies. Violence, persecution are pervasive. There were also several natural disasters. And then, of course, countries have been economically devastated by the pandemic. So economic circumstances for those in bad situations only got worse.
And adding to the context that you just gave us, it's also a major moment of migration to Europe. So it's not just the US where people are headed. You know, I wonder, some of those factors that you're describing to us, and, you know, we've heard on our program here, people migrating due to climate change or even big extractive projects in their homes, like mining, that's forcing them off their land and they cannot subsist at home. Do U.S. immigration laws currently allow for this inability to survive as a reason to come or to stay in the U.S.?
I don't think that our policies reflect the realities and the need to act urgently in the way that we are seeing today. Certainly, you know, people will say, well, that person is actually, you know, they're coming for economic reasons. And it may be that the first reason they explained was an economic rationale. But then if you ask that follow-up question, it may turn out that actually they were extorted by gangs, which put them in a dire economic situation, which led them to migrate. Likewise, when you think about how do the traditional reasons like war and persecution interact with arguably newer dynamics like climate, you may find a family, you know, that lived in Guatemala due to crop failure, they were internally displaced initially. So that was a climate-related reason. But then because of that internal displacement, they are not, you know, living in stability, which makes them more vulnerable to threats of gang violence, et cetera, which then may lead them to international migration, and they'll be starting to head up north.
Yeah. And then we hear President Biden and Vice President Harris tell people a message of literally do not come. And their newly announced policy now appears to codify that message, forcing people who are fleeing their countries to instead stay home and apply for a 2-year visa called parole to come into the United States. Is that a realistic policy response given what people are fleeing?
I think it's difficult to hear that message when, you face the circumstances that some of the clients that we work with are facing. And I think that speaks to kind of your point on those pull factors, because there are some very strong pull factors that are leading people to come specifically to the U.S. You know, one of those is the fact that the U.S. is still the strongest magnet for immigration because it is viewed as a beacon of freedom and land of opportunity. Just last month, the Pew Research Center published a report that showed that the U.S. leads the world by a wide margin in terms of having 51 million migrants in the U.S. in 2020. The next closest country is Germany with 15.8 million. I think a second reason why we see so many coming to the U.S. is because in the Western Hemisphere, obviously this existing immigrant footprint means that there are some large Venezuelan, Nicaraguan, Cuban, Haitian, Honduran, Guatemalan, Salvadorian, Mexican populations, where if someone knows someone in the U.S., whether that be a family member, a neighbor, a friend, it is going to make it more likely that they will want to come here versus someplace else. And then, of course, the final factor is proximity. As you mentioned, what we are seeing in our region is similar to what Europe has seen with the Ukrainian refugees and, you know, nearly 8 million crossing into that region. In our hemisphere, Venezuela has been the slow burning crisis. It's produced numbers at roughly the same scale, with nearly 7 million fleeing the country since 2015. And for those people, you know, what we're talking about is a country like the U.S., which is more accessible. It may require them to, you know, undertake a dangerous or cost prohibitive journey, but it is still possible to reach our border by walking, trains, buses. And I think it also highlights just the desperation has intensified in the last several years.
You know, I want to ask you, Krish, because the reality is that many people who apply for asylum here in the U.S. won't get it, and the numbers tell that story. But it might take years for them to get a final answer, and in the meantime, they're living a very precarious existence here. But that might be better or safer than their home country. What needs to change to truly help people?
I mean, certainly, I think there is bipartisan support for the processing times being decreased. And that's not just in asylum, but for other pathways as well, because I do think that you put more stress on the asylum system. There are more people who come to our southern border, in part because all of our immigration pathways are dysfunctional and backlogged. Just think about the fact that the U.S. refugee program takes about 24 months on average. If you think about a immigrant who has a family member here, for an unmarried adult child of a U.S. citizen from Mexico, it takes them more than 22 years from when they apply to when they reach here. And so I think that's where, you know, we need to invest in the system, because it's in everyone's interest to make sure people have a decision. You know, they should have a legal right, their ability to make their claim, and then a final decision so they can actually decide whether they stay here or they have to return home, that they know their future.
Just finally, what are we not understanding about the current migrant crisis, Krish?
I mean, I think one part of it is just understanding that while there's been intense focus on this issue, the country isn't full. We are not overwhelmed by migrants in a way that we're not capable of responding. Some of this is that the infrastructure has been decimated. Rebuilding it would help us prevent children, families from sleeping on the streets. And then part of it is realizing that just as we look to countries in Europe to step up when the Ukrainian refugee crisis happened and our hearts went out to these women and children, similar crises are happening in our region as well. And we have an opportunity to provide an orderly system where people can seek protection. But the only way we do that is recognize that, you know, this is a system that's been broken for a long time, and we need to stop grandstanding, using immigration as a wedge issue, and realize that we're a nation of immigrants. There are economic reasons, there's national security reasons for why we should figure out a system that works.
Krish Omaravignaraja is president and CEO of Lutheran Immigration Refugee Services. Thank you, Krish.
Thanks so much for having me, Deepa.